Welcome to Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell, awakening the world to the power of God's Word. And now, here is your host, Dr. William Campbell.
Welcome to Beyond Words Radio, where it's our ambition to move beyond simply talking about Christianity to walking more like Christ. This is the Christ who, when someone was in need, he met the need. When someone was disenfranchised, he pulled them back into the circle of society and showed them that God really cares. There's probably been no group more pushed out of the center of the society's concern and love than the pre-born babies, infants that, on the one hand, can be brought into the world through great scientific advancement at the cost of millions of dollars, lives spared, families happy. On the other hand, very quickly, lives are snuffed out to the tune of millions, over a million every year. This is a tough issue, I know that, but it's an important one. And so we're going to address it today under the topic of What If We've Been Wrong? That's the title of a book by an author named Terry Beatley. And Terry is with us in the studio, and her story is rather gripping. It's challenging. So, Terry, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Bill. I look forward to the interview.
I like your book because it's about a story. It's not just content. A lot of people have argued points, but you're doing more than that. You're saying, look, my life is built around a conviction that runs very deep. And I, reading your book, Terry, I think your conviction runs a lot deeper than the arguments pro-life, pro-choice, and the phrases we use. It's around the love God has for these children in the womb. You know, I think of Christ, John the Baptist. They met as preborn children in the womb, and there was leaping and responding one to another. And we see this throughout the Bible. But even if we're not Christians now, science tells us there's something very important happening in the womb. And ultrasounds are the number one reason to convince moms to have that baby. Don't just give it up to abortion. Now, to adoption's a different thing. We're not taking the life out. We're putting it maybe in a safer place. So all the issues that come to the fore. But let's think about a story, your story. So how did you first get concerned about the issue of life?
Well, one of the things that propelled me into this whole pro-life movement is I discovered the domestic and international threat to parental rights due to the aggressive abortion industry, which may take a lot of listeners by surprise. But I was mother, I am a mother of two now grown girls, but back then they were much younger. And I had been working in the career business and then stopped to homeschool my children. It was during those years that I made this discovery, what was happening in the state of Virginia with parental rights. And who and what types of organizations were behind the destruction of parental rights, such as allowing a minor girl to go get an abortion without parental consent or knowledge. And I thought, well, wait a minute, that's insanity, you know, because that's my child. How dare somebody, you know, strip me of my right to guide and nurture my own child, no matter what mistake my child may make, you know, later on. And so I was awakened to that. And then I was asked to go to the March for Life. This is probably now 8 years ago. And it was there I saw the pictures of aborted babies. And I had never even seen an image of an aborted baby. And it really horrified me. And I thought, you know, I really want to know more about this. So I went and visited with a man who heads up a pro-life organization. And he said, Terry, if you want to get involved, he said, you need to understand the history of how America really embraced what's called Malthusian philosophy, the philosophy of controlling the population. And he recommended a book or two, and I read those books. In fact, I devoured the books. I read them like three or four times. And I thought, this is crazy. You know, people need to know what I've learned in here. So I began sharing the information. Well, part of what I had learned was the history of how Margaret Sanger, she's the founder of Planned Parenthood, what she believed Malthusian philosophy and what she implemented back in 1939, which is what she called the Negro Project. That's the title she gave it. And what she wanted to do was drastically reduce, if not completely eliminate, the black population. She looked at, not to get into the weeds about Margaret Sanger, but I just thought this is, again, this is insanity because we're spending close to $500 million a year funding this organization, which which has the ultimate racist roots. And so I began...
So I'm going to ask you to pause here. What you're essentially doing is you're saying, I got pulled into this whole issue. It's a very reactionary issue. People take sides. They get emotionally involved. Mm-hmm. They throw stones verbally and they slander each other, or maybe politically it becomes entrenched with effort to raise money. All this stuff is going on. It's a big cultural battle. It's got a lot of history. But I wasn't in this reactionary mode. I was using my reason. I was studying things behind the scenes. I think what we're urging listeners to do is, can we set aside our arms, our mental armaments, our reactions? Can we pause for a minute and think rationally about some things that aren't often discussed around this issue of pro-choice, pro-life? These are the terms often used in society.
Exactly.
Around the issue of the baby in the womb. So that's where you're leading us here. Well, and the whole thing about how the movement began around Roe v. Wade, Margaret Sanger. So keep going.
I was just searching for the truth. I was never a pro-life activist. I was never a pro-choice activist. Honestly, I was quite ambivalent. I knew for me personally, I could never have an abortion, but I did not think it had anything to do with me. And I can honestly reflect back, as I was a promiscuous teenager, and in college, I thought I was pregnant with my now husband, and abortion was, it was never a consideration. So I spent most of my adult life not even thinking about the abortion issue because it didn't have anything to do with me. However, when my, I guess you'd say my heart was more convicted, you know, seeing the pictures, and then as I studied, that's when I began to recognize the complete and ultimate injustice of abortion. And I kept wanting to get to the truth.
Well,
and then when I was...
Let's pull off, off track, but really going deeper on the same track. Run the issue of pictures. Now, there's an example. People see the pictures on the media and they say, that's so inflammatory. Why would you show something like that to the public? Why did these pictures somehow move you as someone who wasn't really coming in for an argument? What affected you by the pictures?
Because anybody as young as 4 or 5 years old can look at a picture of a baby that's been ripped to shreds. I mean, literally, head mm-hmm. ripped off torso, arms and legs, or a baby burned by saline injection, you know, like for a late-term abortion. And, I mean, you recognize it as a human being. So I recognize the humanity of the unborn child. This, by the way, is the same thing that the abolitionists did in the slavery movement. They wanted, because you got to keep in mind, the slaves were out in the cotton fields. Mm-hmm. You know, the wealthy folks living in their nice homes, they didn't see the slaves. But when they began taking pictures of the slaves' backs being beaten and scourged, you know, and so you could see the scars, the pictures began to circulate. And it really affected the hearts and minds of people. And it's very similar in the ending abortion.
So a lot of what happens in Western society is, instead of being thoughtful, and that's the goal of this radio program, we react out of emotional base. We get angry. We start slandering. We start throwing mud verbally by making little sound bites and not backing it up with facts and data. And so the flip side could be those poor moms who, you know, they had back alley abortions because it wasn't legal. Talk to us about that just for a minute, because I'm trying to get to the root of some of this. Mm-hmm. So is this true? There are thousands of back alley abortions before Roe v. Wade?
Well, that was the propaganda. Now, I heard about that as well. I'm 54 years old. I heard about all these back alley abortions and all this, but then it's not a matter of I decided. I was at a prayer vigil one day asking God, what did he want me to do with all of this information I had been gathering and sharing with people? And I was fervently asking for direction because I didn't know what to do. What do you do when you found out the truth, but it's like, you know, we're in such a lockdown politically in this country. It's like, how do you get the truth out there? Well, what the Lord told me to do, and it wasn't audible, but it was very clear, and he said, go interview Dr. Bernard Nathanson. And Dr. Bernard Nathanson, for your listening audience to know, he's the father of the industry of abortion in the United States of America. Mm-hmm. And he's the man, with a team of other people. They formed an organization called the National Association for the Repeal of Abortion Law. Today, it's known as NARAL, Pro-Choice America. And back in the late 60s and early 70s, they set out with an 8-point propaganda campaign to deceive the American people, to deceive the American justices at the Supreme Court, to deceive doctors, to deceive clergy, so that America would basically embrace legalizing abortion or decriminalizing abortion. And one of those things was to spew these false facts, this propaganda.
Okay, so we definitely need to get more into that, Dr. Nathanson, the whole story, the things you learned there. But again, we're talking about a factual basis. Now, someone can say anytime you have facts, there are counter arguments. And of course, we want to look at both sides of any equation. But you got affected by images. And carry your story further now. How did you get to this place where you're now with a passion representing a message that we need to care for these
babies?
Yeah,
after reading the books that the man who ran this large pro-life organization mm-hmm. recommended, about that time I was heading out to share the information with different pastors, different churches. Well, a movie came out, a DVD called Maafa 21, and that's M-A-A-F-A. It's a Swahili word, African mm-hmm. word, Swahili word that means great tragedy. It's a 2.5-hour documentary and explains the racist history of Planned Parenthood. I mean, the producer, Life Dynamics, they splice and dice it. It's 2.5 hours. The original version was 7 hours long. They wow. prove the racist history of Planned Parenthood. And I took that to a black minister at a rural church in Virginia, and I asked him for a 3-hour appointment. He said yes. And what the fruit that came out of that appointment that day at the end, he truly encouraged me to keep moving forward, to not stop. He said, people need to know the truth about Planned Parenthood. So all these things were converging. And then a few months later, I was at the prayer vigil asking God, what do you want me to do? So it's all this. It was the pictures which convicted my heart, because you can't deny it, mm-hmm. you know, you cannot deny it's a baby. We are dehumanizing. We're trying our best to dehumanize these little babies in the womb who are crying out desperately to immigrate into the United States, mm-hmm. trying to get out of their mother's wombs. And it's propaganda that has pushed this
okay,
on America.
Okay, so Margaret Sanger, anyone can look and find very clearly some of the rather strange philosophies, ideologies that carried her life forward. Mm-hmm. It's not healthy stuff. One can go to find the early beginnings of Planned Parenthood and find racism there, but hey, wasn't the country largely bent that way? Now, today, though, Planned Parenthood is certainly just caring for these moms who need help, right?
Well, that's the pitch. That's the marketing. But what's still happening today is, let me take a step backward. Everybody has a worldview. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the main thing. If listeners can take away one thing today, everybody has a worldview. Even if somebody is a non-believer and they're atheist, that's a worldview. And some of the biggest groups of worldviews are either Marxism, secular humanism, you've got a biblical worldview, postmodern worldview, Islamic worldview. And so everybody has a worldview. Margaret Sanger's worldview was really a blend of secular humanism and Marxism. And so my premise is this: for us to spend tax money funding Planned Parenthood, we are funding a religion. And her religion was, you can really boil it down to three things. She believed in, practiced, and promoted promiscuity. She believed in controlling births of those she deemed less desirable. And third, she believed in what she thought she could do is purify the race through what we call eugenics. So those three things, promiscuity, controlling births, and then eugenics. That's Margaret Sanger in a nutshell. It is a religion. It's a faith, okay? And I think that's really key for listeners.
So you know, whether racism is a dominant theme today with Planned Parenthood or not, the idea that some lives are more worthy of living and being allowed to live in a society than others, it's still carried through with the whole concept of abortion. If this baby in my womb might have a particular syndrome or disease, probably good to just kind of snuff out the life before it comes into the world.
Well, and that's exactly what's happening today, like a Down syndrome child and all this. But I want to weave this back to, because I've heard some people say, oh yeah, Margaret Sanger, she implemented, you know, the Negro Project back in 1939. Yes, indeed she did. But I'm here to say it's still alive and well. Why do I say that? Because the vast majority of abortion clinics are located in minority neighborhoods. And if you just look at the numbers, I think this is in my book, 2012 numbers for abortions of black babies in New York, the state of New York, 2012. I'm rounding now to the nearest 1,000, 31,000 black children died in abortion mills in New York compared to 24,000 who were born alive. So 31 over 26. For somebody to try to convince me that the Negro Project ended, I'm here to say no, it didn't, because 31 children to every 24 born alive were killed by abortion. And so it's time. It's time for America to awaken to the truth. And that's what I've sat down recently with a Planned Parenthood employee. She's a millennial, about 25 years old. But I don't have enough time to explain the setting. But I asked her, does truth matter anymore? And she said, yes, ma'am, it matters, absolutely. And I said, okay. I said, well, does the name, you know, Norma McCorvey mean anything to you?
Terry Beatley is with us in the studio, and we're talking through her own experience of just kind of wanting to get to the bottom of things, get some facts about things she's uncovered around the issue of abortion. And we're talking right now about this woman who goes back to the genesis of the Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision. Terry?
Yeah, so I'm talking with the Planned Parenthood millennial employee, and I'm asking her, does truth matter anymore? And I was being sincere, and she's being sincere. This is not like we're not having a confrontation. And I said, okay, well, I said, does the name Norma McCorvey mean anything to you? And she said, well, no, who's Norma McCorvey? And I said, well, Norma McCorvey's the Roe of Roe v. Wade. And the Planned Parenthood young employee says, I did not know that. And I said, and so I proceed to explain to her how Norma McCorvey, in her own words, because I have a copy and it's in the back of my book, her 2003 affidavit to the United States Supreme Court, where Norma McCorvey's petitioning the Supreme Court to overturn the Roe v. Wade decision. So the Planned Parenthood employee, I mean, now she's very interested. She said, well, tell me more. So I proceed to basically use the words of Norma McCorvey, where Norma explains how she got used back in the early 70s by two pro-abortion activist attorneys who took advantage of her, because Norma McCorvey was, I think she was 19 years old. She was poor. She was a drug addict. And she didn't want to be pregnant. She was pregnant, but she didn't want to be pregnant. But Norma never had an abortion. That's what one of the things America doesn't know. Norma never had an abortion. The lawyers met her at a little pizza beer joint in Texas. They drunked her up on three pitchers of beer. And this is all in Norma's affidavit over beer and pizza. They got Norma to sign on to what we know as the Roe v. Wade case. Norma did not understand anything what she was doing. And then she really never heard back from the attorneys until the Roe v. Wade case opinion came down. And they called Norma. And Norma said, I don't know what you're talking about. I asked you to help me get an abortion. And Norma said, I now have a baby, and you didn't do what you said you were going to do. She said, I never set out to overturn the law all across America. So fast forward, Norma eventually learns what abortion is all about. She didn't even understand what an abortion does to the baby. She did not understand that abortion literally kills a human being. They told her it was just a blob of tissue. So Norma McCorvey in 2003 filed this affidavit to overturn the Roe v. Wade decision because she recognized the humanity of the babies. And by this point, you know, it's millions of children lost their lives. Now, Norma just died in February 2017, so just a few months ago. And it's really weird. I have I'm not an artist, but if I was to draw a caricature of Norma McCorvey, and this may sound really crude or crass, but it keeps coming to my memory, to my mind. I picture Norma McCorvey in her wheelchair, because she ended up living in this, like a little convalescent center. She's in her wheelchair. She's very bitter, you know, because she got used so badly, hurt. And quite frankly, hurt by both sides, because even people on the pro-life side would use her, you know, because, oh, it's Norma McCorvey, you know. So she really she was hurt by both sides. But I picture Norma McCorvey in her wheelchair on this mound of 60 million little babies who had lost their lives, sitting in her little wheelchair. I just picture this black and white drawing. America needs to know. And so when I talk about this, you know, the life issue, I don't even like talking about the politics of it, because I like to request of people, forget anything about political parties. Pretend you don't even know there's such a thing as a political party, right? And let's just get to the heart of the matter. What was told to Norma, that it's a blob of tissue, was a lie. everybody now knows it because of ultrasound. We all know. And all the fetology, everything, all the advances.
As we push into this topic, and a lot of people are saying, wow, this is interesting. It sounds, maybe it's one-sided, okay? Yes, it's sided towards something very significant. I find this in your book. It's the word love. If we really care for people, we'll tell them the truth, and we won't get into this now, but it's not just the babies we're concerned about, the moms who have abortions, the aftermath in their lives, and not just in their psychology and their conscience, but even in their bodies. You know, there's a lot of study there that it's being ignored. We become a society of convenience and selfishness, but in love, sometimes we need to be tough and say, hey, honey, this isn't the best thing for you. And hey, guy, you're pushing a woman to have an abortion. This is not the best thing for you. Now, there is a much bigger issue about how God sees it all, but let's just go down to the level of being loving toward other people. This guy, Dr. Nathanielson, tell us more about him and how that message of love came out.
Yeah, his name is Dr. Bernard Nathanson.
Nathanson.
And so I was at this prayer vigil in November 2009, and the Lord says, go and interview Dr. Bernard Nathanson. And I end up with the interview on December 1st, 2009. And all I can tell your audience is the entire experience felt very surreal, because what I like to say is, if you're studying, say, like the American Revolutionary War, you cannot study that war, that revolution, without understanding who was George Washington, right? You can compare it to any kind of war, a movement, right? Well, this was an abortion revolution. And I was flying to New York to go meet the doctor who launched this, the doctor who was the key player. He was the medical face of the abortion movement. In fact, so much that they gave him the nickname of America's abortion king. He called himself the keeper of the abortion industry keys. And what I like to say is, to unlock his story is to unlock these lies that are holding America captive. So I flew up to New York December 1st, 2009, and I visited with Dr. Nathanson for about an hour. He was 83 years old, terminally ill with cancer. He was very, very frail. And it was a very, very rare thing. He had not granted anybody an interview in well over a year. So even his wife told me, she's like, Terry, you know, this is, she said, consider it a privilege, because he has declined many, many interviews. And what I gleaned out of that interview that day, in my opinion, needs to roar across America. And what's the roar? At the end of the interview, I said, Dr. Nathanson, if you have a message for America, tell me what it is. And I promise you, I will commit the rest of my life to delivering your message until it becomes common knowledge, or until Roe v. Wade is overturned, whichever one comes first. And I did not know if he would say, you know, no, his day is done, or if he did have a message, but indeed he did. And what he said to me is, he said, Terry, he said, continue teaching the strategy. It's an 8-point propaganda campaign strategy. He said, continue teaching the strategy of how I deceived America, and then tell America that the founder of NARAL, Pro-Choice America, says to love one another. Abortion is not love. Stop the killing. The world needs more love. And I'm all about love now. And I reached over and I shook his hand, and I promised him that America is going to know. And of course, I had no idea I'd be writing a book, and it's now a movie in the works and all this.
So I'm going to ask you to pause for a minute. I think there's a thing we can all agree on. We need to downsize a number of lives being snuffed out in the womb. I don't care if you're listening, you say I'm liberal, I'm conservative, I don't care your political party. Nix all that stuff. I think we all agree it's not a good thing that these preborn infants of value, some of them in late term abortions, who could literally be brought into the world with modern medicine, brought into life in a healthy manner. It's not a good thing that they're just being snuffed out. And this is where love comes in. It's like, we should care about these little ones. It's not just potential life. We know these are lives.
These are lives.
They're being taken out. So he's saying, go bring a message of love. And see, a lot of people, I think, politically get on one side of the fence or another, and they start throwing their verbal arguments, and it seems very hateful. But that's not what I'm hearing from Dr. Nathanson.
No, not at all. I mean, he understood the legacy he was leaving behind. He understood he was leaving behind a culture of death. Because when I interviewed him, 2009, by that point, it was about 53 million aborted babies. Now we're pushing 60 million. And actually, in his resignation letter, his wife ended up giving me the never-seen-before resignation letter from NARAL, because Dr. Nathanson became pro-life a short time after ultrasound was invented.
So I want to give one more teaser. There's so much you can talk about. What do we say about love, loving the woman who is pregnant, maybe no fault of her own? It happened. There was pressure. She was forced into it. Anyway, and she economically can't take care of the baby. Does love allow then the taking of this life through abortion?
Does love allow the taking of
the
life?
Yeah. In other words, it seems like a loving thing with the message coming out through Planned Parenthood and the like. And there are alternatives, aren't there?
There are many alternatives. And one of the main alternatives that people, it almost seems like they've forgotten about, is, or a lot of people don't even know, the answer to, say, an unwanted pregnancy is to love the child. And how do you love the child? You provide a life through adoption. And I feel like this is something that's so overlooked. For almost every baby that's not wanted by the biological mother or the biological father, there's a couple out there who so is in dire need of, or a desire to be able to adopt an infant. So just like today, we don't have orphanages filled with little infants. There's a couple out there. There's somebody who wants to be able to adopt that baby. So I don't even use the words giving the baby up, because that sounds like it's a loss for that biological mother and father. What they're doing is they're providing a life for that child through adoption. It's beautiful. So it ends up blessing the biological parents. They haven't lost anything. They've gained. They've gained. When they lose is when they abort the child, and then when they finally, because the day will come, whether it be 5 minutes after the abortion, 5 hours, 5 days, 5 years, or 50 years, it doesn't go away, because it's written on our hearts. We're not to kill our brothers and sisters. We're not to kill our own children. And so providing a life through adoption is a beautiful option.
Okay, and there are more options. We'll talk about those in just a minute.
You're listening to Beyond Words Radio with William P. Campbell. We'll be back right after this.
Scripture Awakening. Awakening the world to the power of God's Word. Read B90, study B next, and live beyond. Read B90. Bible in 90 Days provides a panoramic view of the sweeping story of God's Word. Almost 250,000 people worldwide have read through the Bible from cover to cover using Bible in 90 days. Study Be Next. Be Next is a natural next step after reading B90. Be Next Bible studies are available in digital and print formats, and now the corresponding Amazing Journey video series. Live Beyond. Beyond Words radio satellite broadcast and podcast feature insightful interviews from a wide range of Christian leaders that will both inform and inspire. Move beyond just talking about your faith to living it.
Today's broadcast has been sponsored by Lester Flooring. And now here is your host, William P. Campbell.
Welcome back to Beyond Words Radio. We're glad you're with us for this second half, as we have Terry Beatley talking about her book, What If We've Been Wrong? Terry, before we go further, what if someone wants to get a hold of your book? Where do they find it?
They can find it on www.abortionking.com.
abortionking.com. abortionking.com. And I'm sure you can Google it. It's probably on Amazon and other sites. What I want you to know now, listener, is there's a lot more. We talk about alternatives for women, and we say there can be an adoption. And truly, that's huge, because it's true that there are many parents who are willing to pay thousands of dollars in waiting just to get that adoption. But there are logistical challenges, and what if a mom doesn't quite know what to do with the baby, doesn't know about adoption, hasn't had that kind of support, and just needs to get on with life? If a mom has a baby, what does she do with it? Is there somewhere she can put it?
Well, there are many different choices, and one of them in most communities, or at least many communities, women, young mothers-to-be, or even after they have the baby, can find pregnancy centers. Sometimes they're called pregnancy crisis centers, and one here locally right in Hendersonville, North Carolina's Open Arms Pregnancy Center, and they provide all sorts of care for these young mothers-to-be. And then when they do become, well, after the birth of the baby, anything from diapers and formula to clothes, maternity clothes, there's all sorts of care. And they're on their way to becoming a medical facility, which will be able to provide ultrasounds and other prenatal care. And so it's a beautiful alternative, and there are hundreds of these all across the United States of America, but locally, the one here is Open Arms Pregnancy Center.
Okay, so, and also Open Arms will provide counseling to the young pregnant woman, no matter what the age, what the circumstance, they're there for you. They're there for the parents, for the husband of the child, even if they're not married, the man involved. It's a message of love that we want to promote here, not one of condemnation. If you've had an abortion, we have a message of love for you. God loves you. He doesn't condemn you. But that guilt that we carry, it makes it hard. This is why, I'll tell you honestly, Terry, I believe the reason this message is so emotional for so many people is that we're all complicit as a nation. The abortion industry is fueled by our own selfishness and greed and by circumstance. There is an economic disparity. There are people who tend to have more abortions than others. And what we're not doing is making people live with guilt and push it deeper. We love all who listen. Our goal is to find freedom from guilt by living in a way that honors God, by asking His forgiveness. Mm-hmm. He does care about life. It's very clear in Scripture. And so pushing that forward, Dr. Nathanson sent you out with a message of love. Carry it further a little bit.
He did. He said, continue teaching the strategy of how he deceived America and then deliver that beautiful message that I said.
In other words, we need to get our thinking caps on and realize what got started was on a bad foundation.
Well, it was. It's not just bad. It was a foundation of lies.
Yes.
And this is what I keep coming back to is it's love and truth, truth and love. And so what I do is I love people with the truth. And if truth matters, our feet need to be held to the fire. So I'd like to cover, if I have the time, to go over the eight-point propaganda campaign.
Let's do that. I'll read these 8 points, and you give answer to each one, maybe taking just a minute or so.
Okay, the eight-point propaganda campaign, it was very stealthy. It's been proven to be highly effective. And the reason they had to develop a propaganda campaign is the vast majority of Americans were totally opposed to abortion on demand, because we're talking about the late 60s, okay, and this is something new, fairly new, and it's not like New York was the first state that had legalized abortion, but they set out first to legalize it in New York, and then it worked so well they were prepared to take it into all the other states that had not legalized abortion. So the first thing they did, the NARAL Board of Directors, is they framed the debate around choice. Just abortion is just simply a choice, kind of like choosing which kind of orange juice you want to get when you stand in front of the orange juice. And then the second thing is they crafted these slogans. And most of these slogans are, you're so used to hearing them today that most people don't realize.
I'm going to back you up. You know, that's a big thing to just say choice and move right on. Some would be offended, say, hey, it's more than choosing orange juice. You know, I'm a woman. This is my body. But it's not so much a woman's body, is it? The one that's getting really harmed is the baby.
Exactly. And that, to me, has been one of the most effective lies. It's my body. It's my choice. So those two things tie together. That was the big slogan, which still gets used today. My body, my choice. No, it's not your body, you know, woman. It's not her body. It's a body inside her body.
You know, once we came to realize how clear through science that this body inside our bodies, the baby, the fetus, is more than a mass of tissue and cells. It's a living being that within months has a heartbeat and a brain, and it's very sensitive to pain. When we see all of this, we could take the analogy and say, if you believe it's taken a human life, would it be okay if our society suddenly made the law that we can, out of choice, just take out any life we want at any age?
What I like to tell people is, it's just getting people to think. So all the stuff I go over, it's not meant with any condemnation, is we have to get back to thinking. Yes. You know, why should size determine whether or not you live, Bill? Mm. You know? Okay. What about your location? You know, why is it that if a person's in the womb, why are they less valuable than, say, a six-month-old sitting in a crib? Well, if that's the case, then, well, why not a one-and-a-half-year-old who's walking across the floor? So what? So size, location, their environment. Okay, so what? They're born into poverty. That's not a reason to kill somebody. And then the last thing, size, location, environment, or dependency. Because if we're like, well, no, that person's totally dependent, and that should be the mother's choice. Well, wait a minute. Then just using that stream of logic, well, what about the old person in the nursing home who is 100% dependent on that nursing home or that doctor staff in the hospital? Dependency? That's not a reason to kill somebody. That's not a reason. So all those are off the size, location, environment, dependency. You might as well then, if you agree that those things determine whether or not somebody should live, well then fine, put in skin color, because that's what Margaret Sanger thought, skin color. So it's like we get back to thinking. So what Dr. Nathanson knew is that it would require all 8 points of this propaganda campaign to really make this monumental shift in the United States of America to legalize or decriminalize the killing of human life in the womb. So we got framing the debate, the slogans. And then he would use the complicit media. And why was that important? Because just like we're on the radio today, right? You know, the media is absolutely important if you're going to strategize, you know, messaging across a country, because people rely on the media. So most of the media was made up of young, very liberal-minded, you know, young women who were covering this issue. Not all women, but and they had a woman on staff, a young woman. And he would use the complicit media, because keep in mind, he's a medical doctor. Okay, and these are young reporters. He could tell them just about anything, and they would take his information and report on it. They wouldn't go and check his statistics. They were not double-checking his facts to make sure he was, you know, accurate in what he was saying, because it's almost like they just trusted him. Plus, I'm using, again, his own words. He said the reporters were so tired of opposing the Vietnam War, it probably felt good to support something. And what they were supporting was the pro-abortion movement. Now, the key thing I think listeners should, I think, be rocked by are the false facts and the false polling that he would give the reporters. So he would say, 1 million women a year are having back alley abortions, and 5,000 to 10,000 women a year are dying due to these botched back alley abortions. Now, why would he say that? According to the PR firm, that they had to be able to pull on the heartstrings, the empathy of Americans, because Americans, for the most part, are very empathetic people, compassionate. But those were bald-faced lies and very audacious, big, bald lies. The real numbers were not 1 million illegal abortions. There were about 100,000. And there were not 10,000 women dying in back alley abortions. At the most, on the high side, there were about 200 to 250. And that's on the high side.
It's quite a discrepancy, and a whole nation got moved around false statistics. It's very true. We can go back and read the data. And even today, a lot of the reporting is inaccurate about numbers. But wow. So
well,
you got
well,
right to the source.
People will say, well, oh, we don't want to go back to those days of all those back alley abortions. And all. Right. Well, it's like, well, wait a minute. That was all those. That's all propaganda. Because the other piece of propaganda he would spew, because every good movement needs a good hard statistic, right? Well, he would say, and I asked him when I interviewed him, I said, where did you get the 60% statistic that 60% of Americans want abortion on demand? And he said, Terry, he said, at any good movement, you need to have a statistic and you need to quote it over 50%. And he said, I pulled it out of thin air. So he would say 60% of Americans want abortion on demand. The real number is 0.5%.
Okay, let's just go over that again. This should cause some jaws to drop. The pro-abortion movement, talking from the very mouth of its founder, Dr. Nathanson, is based on the idea that over half of Americans back there at the time it really got launched wanted to have abortions. The reality was it was a fraction of 1% who on accurate surveys would have weighed in with such an opinion. That's that huge lie has impacted our country. And before you go on, what do you see as the hope that perhaps people realizing this isn't all about justice and equality? It's a movement based on a lie. What is the chance that it might be reversed based on people thinking about what is best for society and all of its members?
I believe firmly Roe v. Wade and Doe versus Bolton, the companion case, will be overturned for many different reasons. But if I had to just list one, because truth matters. Secondarily, but equally, love matters. We've turned in. I mean, look at us. I mean, Dr. Nathanson even warned of this when he resigned from NARAL. He said that as long as abortion is legal, we will see increased violence, increased public turmoil, and the disintegration of the American family unit. I mean, Bill, that was 1975.
Yeah.
Look at us now, 2017. I mean, just this past weekend, the whole Las Vegas shooting. So there are forces that be that want to divide this country, and I'm sure you've covered a lot of those forces over the years. But one of the planks in that worldview is to push abortion onto this country. And the purveyors of pushing legalized abortion had the worldview of Marxism and secular humanism back in the late 60s. It's very fundamental. If you can get a nation to kill its own, if you can get mothers to be willing to literally kill their own children, what else can you accomplish in this country? You can accomplish turmoil, you know, violence, and the disintegration of the building block of a civilized society, the family unit. And here's something else, and I know I haven't even finished going through the 8-point strategy yet, but what I've recently found through Kevin Burke, who's very involved with Rachel's Vineyard, he has surveyed men behind bars. And what he has uncovered is the vast majority of men in prison have been involved in abortion. They've either encouraged their wives or girlfriends to go get an abortion, or they complacently sat by and, you know, allowed their wife or girlfriend to go have an abortion. And what numerous men have quoted, and I'm paraphrasing here, but in the gist of it was this: they thought they were damned anyway because they had allowed the killing of this of their innocent child. What was the big deal killing one more person? And it landed them behind bars. It's exactly what Dr. Nathanson predicted.
Let me turn this into something positive. I believe the greatest need today is for a spiritual awakening.
Yes.
When we look at awakenings through history, it causes people to truly love each other, to awaken to the power of God's grace and forgiveness. It brings wholeness to society. It doesn't just fill up the pews in the church. It empties the prisons and jails. We can look at the revival in Wales and see how this happened. That came over to America through Azusa Street. And we see the same spreading all through the global South, where Christianity is growing most quickly. This great move of God. So all I'm trying to say is that I believe what needs to happen for revival to come, part of it, is we need to humble ourselves and ask God for forgiveness. You know, the very thing that in some measure we can't statistically say how many in prison have gotten there in part because of an abortion and a guilt they carry. What we can say is we're all imprisoned nationally to a conscience of guilt, and God wants to forgive us and set us free.
Absolutely. And I think it's important for me to share, you know, part of my story. Again, I did not personally have an abortion. And for me, what I had to ask God to forgive me for was for my apathy. I didn't think it had anything to do with me. And then, you know, and then through just research, and again, it wasn't because of politics. It was through research. I mean, God just revealing the truth behind how our nation shifted from a culture that we did away with slavery. I mean, we did away with slavery only just a few years later, because really, in the grand scheme of things, it was just a few decades later, you know, 1865 to 1973, so whatever, 100 years later. We're legalizing and dehumanizing another group of people. And so I had to repent for my apathy, because I thought it had nothing to do with me. And I really didn't understand what was happening in abortion. And that's what I've discovered, is I've met lots of pastors now over the past 7-8 years who had advised women to go have abortions. But when I have now taught them the history behind all this, they've repented. And then they actually began preaching the full gospel of life. And that discovering the truth about men behind bars. And here's the other big thing. Why is breast cancer on the rise? Dr. Nathanson did not know back in the late 60s, early 70s, when he pushed abortion onto America, that when a woman has an abortion, this is different if she has a miscarriage, but when she has an abortion, it leaves her breast, tissue, the cells, in a state of being basically susceptible to cancer, in situ breast cancer. So in 1973, when abortion became legal, in situ breast cancer was 1 in 12 women. And today, it's 1 in 7. So we can throw all the little pink ribbons around and all this. I say baloney. Let's call a spade a spade. Abortion drastically increases the likelihood of breast cancer. And people, you don't have to take my word for it. Listeners should go on to the Breast Cancer Prevention Institute. I think that's probably .org. It's Dr. Angela Lanfranchi. Lanfranchi. This woman travels the world. She's a breast cancer surgeon, oncologist, surgeon, but she travels the world teaching women the whole connection between abortion and breast cancer.
Wow. Bring us back. We just have a bit of time left. Bring us back. You were starting to walk through these 8 points that Dr. Nathanson wanted you to share with the world, because he was about to eventually be brought into the presence of God. Mm-hmm. But he knew you could be a representative for God on this big issue.
Yeah, the seventh element of that propaganda campaign was justifying the lie. Dr. Nathanson would tell the media, you know, keep in mind, he's an MD. So when an MD speaks to the media, you know, he's speaking with such authority. And he would tell them that look, the million women a year, they're going to go have an abortion anyway. Let's just make it legal. You know, why should they be criminals and all that? So he would justify. But it became, sadly, the self-fulfilling lie. So as soon as it became legal, we were very quickly on our way to literally a million abortions a year. So it went from 100,000 to a million, and we've never turned back. So it's 1 to 1.2, 1.3 million abortions every single year. And now, plus, women are taking the morning after pill and all this, so they're sloughing off a new life that's an embryo. So, and then the fourth part, which we don't have time to get into the nuts and bolts of it, but the fourth part was because they were in New York and they're type of victory is a political victory. They had to get enough people voting to support pro-abortion or pro-choice candidates, however you, whatever adjectives you want to use. And up in New York, there were lots and lots of Catholic voters. And so they had to implement what they called the Catholic strategy, which was to literally separate the Catholic voters' religious doctrine, being pro-life, because the Catholic doctrine is 100% pro-life, from their legislative judgment. And so they implemented, it was four parts to the Catholic strategy to get enough Catholics voting pro-choice. And sparing all the details, it became so successful that today you've got, you know, about 50% of Catholics voting pro, if not higher, pro-choice. But it was very methodical. It was deadly. It's effective. And you put those 8 points together, this is how we've unleashed what Dr. Nathanson called the barbaric age of disposable life. We are literally throwing lives, you know, down the drain, into the dumpsters. And now, worst of all, with all the proof of Planned Parenthood, we're literally now selling baby body parts. I know today's interview, we don't have time to get into it, but your listeners need to know this is a multi-billion, not million, but billion-dollar industry. The trickle-down effects of disposable life, I mean, if people really knew the details of where all the money's made, it's shocking. And so we have to restore a culture of love. And the way you do that is you restore a culture that values the dignity of all human life.
Okay, so going back to real thinking around this issue, you mentioned Dr. Nathanson and the message he wanted you to carry to others. When we look at the actual issue of Roe v. Wade and the points, the assumptions in which it got pushed into the legal system, let's look at those one by one. I think you got in your book maybe six major assumptions. And I want us to think out loud about these things. First of all, we can't know what a human being is and when its life begins. I think that was back there when this was first put into law, an assumption.
Yeah, the sad irony about that opinion. You know, this was one of the six assumptions the Roe v. Wade court made as they handed that decision down in January 22nd, 1973. And just a few months later, real-time ultrasound was invented, and it was rolled into the hospital Dr. Nathanson was working at. And Dr. Nathanson, for the first time, saw the baby on real-time ultrasound, wiggling, smiling, and all those things that babies do in the womb. Unequivocally, we know today that, and it's actually by the 18th day, the baby's heart is beating. It's not even a couple months old, less than a month old, that baby's heart's beating. We know when life begins. It's been scientifically proven that life begins at conception.
So as we look at these assumptions, the obvious should be stated. If a law was passed that's infecting and affect every one of us, based on false assumptions, we've got new information, we should re-examine that law which was passed.
We absolutely
and
should.
This is not to hurt anybody, but it's in love to protect babies, moms, the whole of society.
Right. Well, and it's important for listeners to know that the father of the industry of abortion, Dr. Nathanson, I mean, he urged that. And at the end of one of his books, he said, bottom line, he's just encouraging everybody who's uneasy with this issue of permissive abortion to re-examine the issue. And he said, because he's left it all behind, and it's all captured in my book, all of the 8 points, all of these things that the court did. And then, equally as important, Norma McCorvey, the Roe of Roe v. Wade. She wanted everybody to know the truth. And this is where I stand, is that I believe, Bill, that it's possible that this culture that's so broken, that's been so deceived, that if they just had the truth, I believe their hearts would be convicted, that they would say, you know what, truth does matter. You know, it's not just people's opinions. We're such an opinionated society. Well, what about the truth? Your opinion's your opinion, right?
Sure.
But what about the truth?
Yes.
So that's why I think these erroneous assumptions of Roe v. Wade are key.
That's good. I'm going to read them all and maybe pause, giving us time to talk about just one more as a closer. Second, abortion is a health care involving a normal, responsible doctor-patient relationship. And we could go into that one in depth, but we won't right now. Motherhood and child rearing force upon the woman a distressful life and future. So let's talk about that.
A distressful life and future. Well, I would say no, because what happened is baby Moses laws were passed in all 50 states. And I did not know this until the lawyer provided me with the facts of this law. And what it is the woman, the mother and father or the mother can drop an infant off at rescue squads, at police departments, at fire stations from birth to 1 year old, and they will not be charged with abandonment. So the idea that they have to kill the baby because, oh, they can't handle this, or it's going to be too disruptive to her life and all this, well, that's not show, because we've got baby Moses laws.
Here's another one. An abortion decision is truly voluntary and fully informed.
No, it's not, because you can walk into even Planned Parenthood today and you know, in the early stage, they'll say it's just, you know, blob of tissue. And most women, they don't have an abortion because, oh, they just feel like they've got so many different choices and they're so happy. The women have abortions because they're made to feel that that's the only choice they really have. Nobody joyfully walks into
that.
Exactly. Yeah. So much for pro-choice.
Let's be honest about it.
That's right.
We ought to be given choices to these women. The next, the risk to the woman's health and life was far greater in carrying the child a full term than in having an abortion.
Yeah, this was a lie, very pervasive, particularly early on, that an abortion was safer than childbirth. No, it's not. And all the science, all the data proves that. In fact, abortion actually leads to sterility, many times infection and all this. The sad part, too, is the women who die due to complications of abortion. Many times the abortionist will send that woman off. His hands don't even want to touch that woman after that abortion. So she may go to the hospital with a perforated uterus, but she died from a perforated uterus. She didn't die from complications due to an abortion surgery. It's very, very devious. So the statistics on deaths due to complications due to abortion, it's very skewed because many times they may not be dying in the abortion facility. They're going to die at the hospital, and that gets coded some other code.
So if you, the listener, want to get the last point, you'll have to get the book. But let me say more than that. We've hardly touched the surface. We do need to think more deeply. It's not enough to listen to a radio program. I do encourage you to read this book, What If We've Been Wrong, by Terry Beatley. Terry, tell us one more time where to find it.
Yeah, I really encourage people to go to abortionking.com. That's my book landing page. In fact, instead of Amazon, because Amazon takes 50% right off the cuff.
There you go.
abortionking.com. And for anyone who goes on and orders the book from abortionking.com, when you get to the purchase site, if you put in the code OA for Open Arms Pregnancy Center right here in Hendersonville, North Carolina, I'm in a wonderful position. When you order it directly from my publisher, which you can access my publisher from abortionking.com, use that code. I'm going to be sending back to Open Arms Pregnancy Center a significant portion of the profits, and that'll go to help unwed mothers and fathers and their babies choose life and to rebuild a culture of life right here in Hendersonville, North Carolina.
Terry, thank you for being with us today.
This has been Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell. Beyond Words is a ministry of Scripture Awakening. And if you'd like to help support this ministry, or if you would like to know more about Beyond Words, visit us on our website at scriptureawakening.com.